Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught! Touchdown, Keenan Allen! What a great...
My goal is not to break you. My goal is to make you harder to break.
Number six!
Huge sack by Joey Bosa.
90-yard touchdown! 90-yard touchdown!
Picked off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Sets his feet, takes a shot downfield, has Knighton. Caught! Touchdown, Chargers!
Grab your lunch boxes and go attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Emily, trust, respect. There are not many finer three-word phrases in the National Football League. It's another sweep of the Raiders, the fourth divisional win for the Bolts in as many encounters for season 2025, Herbert's fifth straight win against Vegas, and the mathematical elimination of the Raiders. Ain't much sweeter in life. Oh, except Herbert thought he could duke a safety and broke a bone in his hand. So I guess you can't have it all. But that's where we are. What's going on, TDU crew? Welcome to another victory pod of the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. You've got Andy here with Alistair. Sadly, no Jack today. Business end of the school year sees him engaged with all of his obligations. Hopefully, he'll be back joining us next week. But Al, the show must go on. We had a very fun day watching this one. Our little ones enjoyed a little cute play date. And we enjoyed the Chargers win. How are you, my man?
Good, man. Yes, we did. And we were trying to parent and watch the game at the same time, which presents
some obstacles.
We're
getting good at it. We're getting pretty good at it.
Yeah, we are. And they know the moments, I think, when to interrupt us and when not to come up and drag a hand asking for us to open a packet of biscuits. They're like, oh, maybe not right now. It's third down and long.
That's strictly about my child. He's a little pig. Loves his bickies.
Yeah. No, Imi knows my body language as well and when's the right time. We needed to feel good again. Chargers fans needed to feel good again after that Jags game. And something that gave us hope, because we were discussing before we hit record, we have a murderer's row of opponents between now and the end of the season. It is competition season, as Harbaugh said in his press conference today, not holiday season. December's competition season. And our playoffs, in some respects, kind of start right now this week, Monday Night Football. So I think the big question for Chargers fans, for the Bolt fan, for the TDU crew, we expected this game would be a win, right? We've got a guy on the opposition sideline having a three-quarter century life crisis, chewing bloody bubble gum on the sidelines. We expected to win this game against a two-win outfit. But the question was always going to be how we won. Is it enough to give us hope that really this season is still alive? And I think that's what we need to talk about today.
Absolutely. And I think there were elements, I've mentioned, of course, the sort of the dark side of the moon at the top, but there were elements of the game that were very reassuring and, to an extent, things that we hadn't seen. A pretty well-rounded performance from the offensive line, getting good push. Look, we're playing the Raiders. We'll highlight that and everything can fall underneath it. But getting good push from the running game, really feeling this confidence in having Vidal and Patterson as our two backs. And we'll get into who's scheduled to return next week, which just adds another element of hope, I guess, with Hampton due to come back. Even when the passing game showed some spark, it also fizzled a bit too. Defense was back to being a real threat and really buoyed the offense quite a lot in moments throughout the game. So, look, was the 7-7 halftime score flattering to the Raiders? You better believe it was, because it was dominant from the Chargers. Just a couple of hiccups. That was a shot to the right foot of my co-host. Just like the Chargers did on those two possessions following the opening touchdown drive. But, you know, then the foot got put on the pedal after halftime and we really just sort of ground them down. Your left foot, not your right foot with the big hole in it. How were you feeling in that first half, man? Because we were all over them, but just failed. And, you know, there were fourth down calls, there were red zone hiccups, two things that were... I could feel you firing up on the couch next to me. How did you see that first half and how that all the possessions and everything played out.
It was an inefficient and wasted first half for a dominant performance. The defense from pillar to post was outstanding in this game. But the offense, I think, is where we should start, because that is possibly what will hold back this team, I think, from getting to its desired destination. And I'm happy to break down first half issues, but I think bigger picture on offense, this was a really interesting game. And it's worth noting, we had that show last week with Ryan and with Jack, and I talked about maybe relying on some more 10 personnel, spreading the ball out and attacking through the air to kickstart this offense. That is not what happened. They went in the opposite direction. In fact, when I looked at the list of inactives before this game, it was hilarious. It was Disley inactive, who I thought we should get in there. It was Nico Reed inactive, who I thought might help us play more man. It was KLS inactive, who I thought, let's swap out Darius Davis because special teams isn't working. It was Naquan Jones inactive, who I thought, let's get in there and fortify the front line. So they actually stuck to their plan. And they went the way that I thought they might, which is let's double down on getting bigger and heavier and really running this ball. That's our recipe for success. And I had my doubts heading into this game because I know you just qualified everything by saying it's the Raiders. But in this very discreet area, the Raiders defense was second in the NFL at rush yards per attempt allowed and third in the NFL in EPA per rush allowed. That is an elite defensive line, whether you like it or not. Their front seven come downhill very fast. Their real weakness is the secondary and their ability to rally and tackle. And we saw that in the game, I thought. Yeah. So for Roman to come in and say, we're actually going to try and establish our identity in this game, he actually emptied out the entire bag of tricks. Watching the All-22 is a treat. And if fans have access to it, I would highly recommend it. They ran outside zone, inside zone. I'm taking notes. They're running pin and pull. They're running counter. They run toss crack on that Vidal 58-yard touchdown with McConkey and Trey Harris cracking down on the defensive ends, Sawyer looping out in space, and Vidal doing the rest. And they even ran crunch, which is this rare run you see once in a blue moon with your center and left tackle coming forwards and a couple of pullers. And they even got Trevor Penning involved as an line tight end on four snaps, and it really worked. The thing I couldn't believe, mate, was 36 designed running back carries. Only 8 of those were for no gain or negative yardage, and some of those were down the stretch when they're just trying to milk the clock. I could not believe the number of favorable second and third down situations we had in that game when we decided to go in running the ball, which I thought was a recipe for disaster.
For sure. Completely agree. It was the opposite kind of method for the effective output that we had that I would have thought going into it. But the physical running nature of Vidal and Patterson was awesome to watch. I think Vidal had 11 missed tackles forced. And look, you know, when you're seeing QJ break through 3 tackles to get to the goal line early on in the game, you kind of know what you're up against, right? It really set the tone for how this Raiders defense was going to manage a Harbaugh-esque game plan. And that's, I felt like this week in patches was the most sort of Harbaughian kind of win, just that backing in, you know, having the injured quarterback, backing in the game plan, sticking by it, playing physical on both sides of the ball, winning the contest in the trenches. And for the offensive line to have arguably one of their better games of the year as a group against this defensive line was really impressive to see. Outlier being the freak of nature that is Max Crosby. I kind of felt bad for Pipkins at times being just put on an island. He was just beaten by speed more than anything else, like in the run game, in the pass game. He's such a special player, Crosby, so credit there.
That's where we're at now, by the way. Like Pipkins is our most athletic tackle, and he's just being completely beaten by speed by Max Crosby on a few of the ones we didn't give him chipping help. We'd just have to deal with that, I think, for the rest of the season.
I did like the Herbert kind of throwback to Philip Rivers that you'll hear in our intro song. The Philip Rivers on Yannick Ngakoue screaming in the defensive end's ear. Max Crosby not liking that at all, decking Herbert. I just thought, that's good gear. Good on you, Justin. You do have a little bit of charm and character underneath your introverted persona. So very fun to see that. Obviously, the game plan had to change on the fly with Herbert leaving for 8 snaps. I thought Trey Lance was admirable stepping in, but it halted the rhythm of the offense. Greg Roman had to think on the fly. Before we get too much into Herbert leaving the game, there was a play. I didn't do the all 22. There was a play. It was first quarter, 2nd and 6. Herbert keeps the ball, steps up in the pocket, and it was the first sort of big hit that he took just before the Jeremy Chinn sort of spear tackle. I want to know if you saw anything out there as far as coverage. Were we looking at just a blanketed sort of secondary and no room to move for the receivers? What did you see?
Andy set me up slightly with this one beforehand because I wanted to think about it. And the play is talking about you've got 2nd and 6 from the LAC 30. It's the second snap of the game. Herbert scrambles for 3 yards. We're in 11 personnel with Fisk as the tight end. And I like this. If you're going to have your only tight end on the field being Fisk, you can't be so one-dimensional that it's always run. So we start with the 3-by-1. You've got Fisk, Trey, McConkey to the top of screen, QJ isolated to the bottom. Pre-snap, Harris then motions across and it becomes a 2-by-2 formation. The Raiders are actually playing cover 4. So off the snap, the answer to the question here was Fisk runs a quick out and he's open in the flats. And that's where the ball should have gone. If Herbert threw it straight away to Fisk, he would have caught it, turned up field and got to the first down marker. What Herbert did instead, I think, speaks to a broader problem that still shows up often on the film for me. He is Keenan and McConkey conscious. He really is. So on this particular play, his front side read was Fisk to the flat and McConkey a spot route. He wanted to go to McConkey and the dropping linebacker got into that hook zone so that it was just too tight. There were two defenders in around McConkey and that's where he's looked and gone, then he kind of looks to the right and takes off and he ultimately gets tackled. I saw that many times in this game as well. When I say many, I'll say 5 snaps because we didn't pass the ball a lot. Where I thought the coverage alignment directed he should go, he decided not to do it. There was one where he could have thrown deep to QJ or to Keenan. The defender on QJ has his back to him. The defender on Keenan is playing catch technique and has his eyes to Herbert. Herbert throws it to Keenan. And this was that deep pass down the right sideline that just fell incomplete. And there are these balls that get forced to Keenan. I mean, Keenan had some magnificent catches on 3rd down for conversions. But I don't actually think Herbert's had his best ball in the last 3 games. That's reflected in his PFF grading. Not that that is the be-all and end-all, but I think the grading is fair that Herbert is, for whatever reason, if it's a pass protection issue or a trusting receivers issue, not really going to where I think the ball is designed to go on plays. He's turning down stuff for Keenan and Ladd. And what about his interception this week? That was not great, was it?
I didn't think the play call was great. I didn't think the execution of the play call was great. And certainly not the decision to throw that pass to Kai Blue Kelly undercutting McConkey on that route. That was a forced ball. And look, I'm not disputing that Herbert's great. I love him to bits. I feel like every time we criticize him, we get smashed for, you know, not saying trust him. He does the right thing. He does more often than not. But there's a few of these things that are becoming a consistent theme where he's leaving reads out there in favor of his guys and just trying to put the team on his back. And just to go away from that interception, it happened again with the Jeremy Chinn tackle. He exits the game. He comes back looking like he's jumped on stage for Motown's 25th anniversary television special back in 1983. Don't at me if you don't get it. That's when Michael Jackson debuted the white glove. Google it. And I just thought, you know, with the opposition that you're playing, the Raiders, you can't just say this is going to be a win regardless of what I do. Surely with the next 5 games to come, all potential playoff teams in their own right, or very difficult on their day, just play a little bit smarter and a little bit safer. Get yourself out of this unhurt, uninjured, and it didn't kind of go that way. And now we're sort of looking down the barrel of Herbert being day-to-day. He's just had surgery on his hand to fix a fractured metacarpal bone. Yeah, it's his non-throwing hand, but we've seen it before where that actually does affect, and it did affect him the way he was. He bobbled a couple of snaps when he came back into the game. There were messy handoffs to the running backs as well. He even was doing tosses at stages. So, yeah, I think it all culminates to maybe putting himself under more pressure than is required and not having, look, with Sawyer at left tackle, I think it was the 21st different combination of starting five on the offensive line, which I'm not an almanac, but I think that's got to be close to some kind of, or pushing records at least. It does make it hard to... Al, got any input on that?
But let's call it for what it is. Herbert cannot make that throw, right? He can't do that. If he's going to play the way he's been playing the last three weeks, which is actually some of the fewer big-time throws of his career, we're used to seeing him make two to three ridiculous throws a game. He hasn't been doing that the last 3 weeks, and I think part of that is being mindful of the too many turnovers stat and trying to protect the ball. Here, he's at the two, and it's a rub route, and the Raiders DB's passed it off. And he looked, and you've got to check the coverage before you make the throw. That is very lucky that that's not a 98-yard interception return for a touchdown, because at the point where you throw it, it's now out of your control. He's thrown that short. The route is jumped, and he's lucky that Kelly's angle took him out of bounds. If he lands in bounds, you've got a chase for the end zone. So he can't do that anymore. Maybe the glove will change his perspective. We know there's going to be more snaps from the pistol and the shotgun. He's not going to be able to go under center. It's probably going to change the play calling, right? Roman called design rushes in this game the most he has for the season. 55.2% of snaps were design rushes. I think that should help him. And hopefully this will help him too. The fact that we may have found with that 21st line combination the best one since Joe Alt went out, because I thought Sawyer looked really impressive in this game. And I really liked the time Herbert had to throw. He was using jump sets and some athleticism that I didn't know he had, Jamari. And we should praise him for the running game as well. The whole unit blocked with aplomb. So hopefully, Justin, you just go back to the early season and mid-season form where you're playing really well and you can feel a little bit better protected by a line who actually allowed you to be pressured on the fewest dropbacks of all but one game this year. So that's my silver lining of hope for the offense heading down the stretch. Yeah.
Another silver lining is, of course, the Super Herb. As a great mate, we don't shout him out enough, a great mate of TDU. He's a day one listener. Our great friend Dom likes to say, "Fine Herb, this man doesn't wilt." 2022, fractured rib, torn labrum, 0 games missed. 23, broken middle finger on his left hand, non-throwing hand, broken right index finger. He missed the last 4 games. Season was pretty much dead in the water with the 5-8 throwback to the 63-21 thrashing at Vegas. 2024, high ankle sprain and re-aggravation, 0 games missed. So he's had some bad injuries and he has played through them. Broken bone in his left hand. We'll see what happens. Surgery sounded successful, but yeah, there's got to be a way that he works in a little bit more sense to how he plays the game, which might be hard for him. But also Greg Roman, you know, as you said, it will limit the playbook to more or less snaps under center. Does make those 4th-and-1, 3rd-and-1 situations a little bit more difficult when you can't kind of thrust your 6'6" quarterback across the line. But I would like to think that Greg has something up his sleeve to remedy that.
Well, that we'll find out about, because the last little mitigatory point on Herbert, I'll add, is we still have a man coverage problem on offense. The Raiders defense did play some man against us, and there are still too many occasions where Roman's scheme and lack of ingenuity and also our players themselves, Keenan, Trey, QJ, some of whom struggled to get open against man coverage, impacted Herbert in this game. The All-22 shows that there are times where Herbert looks up, everyone's clamped, and then there's really not much you can do. We've said he needs to get better at dirting the ball and living to fight another down, but that's where he will take off and try and make a defender miss his in space sometimes, to the detriment of his physical health. So we need to support him. We need the coaches to support him and make the correct calls on fourth down and to use timeouts correctly. We won't break down this week's one, but we had yet another episode of that's not how to use data to inform decision making when we're up 7-0 and running a shotgun handoff to Vidal with no motion or anything. But overall, positive week from the offense, I think, Andy, feeling much better and maybe gives us some hope moving forward because we've seen some things we didn't see at least in the last few weeks.
Yep.
Onto the defense.
Sure. Really impressed with the pass rush. I thought Tooley set the tone excellently from the start. That first drive, PBU, he cleaned up. Mac absolutely slammed DJ Glaze back into Geno Smith. And hey, you've got to finish the sack, right? Tooley did that. Bud Dupree even stepped up, had a big run stop and a sack, and did his dance, putting out the fire. Some entertaining stuff.
It's
if
a good
you do
one.
It once a month, I'm about it, man. I'm about that. Look, we did I think the defensive line as a unit almost completely nullified Ashton Jeanty. There were a couple of them. He might have had a patch of three rushes in a row for 19 yards. Beside that, he was in that realm of 2-3 yards, tackle for loss. There's only so much you can do to stymie a freak like Brock Bowers. And look, if it wasn't for him, could have been an absolute shutout. Cam Hart had some good reps, struggled a little bit. There's nothing you can do about that touchdown catch, right?
That's
freaking ages stuff. Unbelievable. But who else stood out to you? I thought the three linebackers, Di Perryman and Henley, all rose to the occasion for where they'd been in the last couple of weeks. What were your big takeaways from the defensive side of the ball?
The biggest takeaway is scheme. Whereas Giro didn't really do anything different, he leaned into heavier personnel usage. Jesse Minter completely transformed anything we've seen from this defense ever. So he did all the stuff that we were talking about. They ran cover zero on 15.2% of plays, the highest rate in any game under Minter. What we saw was what we called for on the show last week. We saw run blitzing. We saw Henley used on the edge. Jefferson, Derwin, Molden, late before the snap, blitzing and adding an extra body into the box, usually coming from the backside of the play. That changes your numbers, right? Instead of being in a minus run fit where there's one more blocker than you have defenders filling gaps, we're neutralizing that or even giving you an additional number in defense. And that allows your linebackers not to have to play two gaps or your defensive linemen not to have to do this knockback fallback technique that Ryan was saying. It just made it so much easier. We allowed only 0.018 yards before contact per rush. Lowest average of the season. Is this the recipe moving forward? We thought, and it was great to see on third down, if our corners play man, Geno's first read is not going to be open quickly enough. And in that half of a second, he's got to hold the ball, Tooley and Mac and everyone gets home. See you later.
Yep.
It was so good to see. And I just wonder if that is going to give them confidence to do that, whoever their opponent is. Or was this a Geno-specific thing, Andy? I think that's the biggest question of all.
I mean, when you see a guy get sacked 10 times the week before, you're licking your lips, right? And you're going, we'll send it. We'll go cover zero. So maybe they'll be a little... And look, you're kind of playing against Brock Bowers, not to egregiously disrespect the rest of the Raiders receivers. This coming week, we've got AJ Brown, we've got Devonta Smith, we've got Saquon Barkley, we've got a much better offensive line, we've got a better quarterback. So they're all the things that I think have to come into the mindset of Minter when preparing. I don't want to see him recoil back into sort of his safe blankety zone where it's the bend, don't break, don't show too much because we give up stuff elsewhere. But the modularity of his defensive system this week worked so well. When you when you do play that man coverage, you are reducing the amount of time that Geno Smith has for it, or the quarterback has for a guy to get open, as you said so well. You make it simpler. The massive thing that I noticed was just single gap for the linebackers. Just this is where you're going, and it didn't make them think twice. And you see Perryman come downhill and smash him. Henley as well through the A gap, and then you've got Derwin kind of outside the tackle coming in for a sack. So
and what was really also important on that, I think we still see a Perryman coverage problem. There were a few where he gets trapped in man with Bowers coming across the field. He's never going to stop that in trail technique. No. But I think what we saw in this game is Minter is prepared to get die on the field in some situations to give Perryman a chop out. And this was nice for Perryman. He was a downhill thumper. He still gave up 5 catches from 5 targets in coverage. So I think we can expect to see die on the field in obvious passing situations more often than not.
And for the few times that, you know, Dye was noticeable, he played pretty well. He played well in coverage, had a pass breakup. It wasn't noticing him for bad things. And like I said, for the last few weeks that the linebackers have had, this was a collective step up. So whatever Jesse did as far as getting these guys ready to play and executing, it was great. And I'd like to see him continue with that trend, because it's been inconsistent output when he kind of goes back into his shell and, you know, operates with a light box, too high shell. And there's more room for error. I think this is how we're doing it. And they went out and did it. And that was really great to see.
Yeah. And let's be clear, you can still do both. And they did in this game. There are still, don't get me wrong, there are many snaps still with umbrella coverage, 4 defensive linemen, 2 backers and nickel. And you can see, oh, it's a Boigby and Caldwell as only 2 tackles on the field for this rep. But it's just that balance, because it was something at like 84% zone or 82% zone. And that's too easy, because that's when in 3rd and 11 or any kind of 2nd and 8 longer situation, they know, the offensive play caller knows, you're going to have a 4 deep structure, which opens up all of these soft spots. And if you mix that up, you're going to have a way better chance of occasionally catching them napping. And those sacks win games. That's your drive killer. That's your forced fumble from Khalil Mack, who's playing excellently. And one, again, he just continues his love affair in games against the Raiders. And isn't it brilliant? And then you get Tooley. Congratulations, first 10 sack season. I predicted incorrectly that he wouldn't reach 10 sacks this season, and he's done it with 5 games left, beating up on guards, all this shit that Jason Odafe Owe being in the team allows him to do on third down. So to talk about the defensive side, this performance also gives me confidence that maybe the season's not over, because on offense we've finally found an offensive line combo and something that's working running the ball. And on defense, we put in one of our best games for the year. So I'm feeling good, man. I'm feeling good about
this.
We're
8-4. The season's definitely 8-4. The season's definitely not over. Like we're so far away from that. We were talking earlier. Al and I had a coffee this morning, and we were having a laugh thinking about the show that we did with Ryan on the weekend, and just Jack's fantastic way of coming up with questions for us that are just really throw you off. And I probably incorrectly suggested that if the Chargers 2025 season were to be a film genre, horror might have been the wrong choice, because, you know, we're sitting at what? Yeah, 8-4 now. But yeah, there's definitely been room for concern. That said, with Monday Night Football coming up against the Eagles, our playoffs almost start now, at least for the potential to win the division, hoping that this freakish luck that Denver manufacture comes to an end. It's getting ridiculous. They're doing what the Chiefs have done the last 3 years and just find a way to win these one-score games. But
I was cheering heavily for Marcus Mariota.
Mariota.
I can't believe they keep winning these games. It's just unbelievable. They're up to a 9-game win streak. A bit like the Pats. They, we'll see. I've got some I've got some good feelings when we play them again, but the question will be, will there be something to play for in week 18? They keep winning that much.
Yeah, well, surely still, you know, it's neck and neck in the wild card race. You've even got the Bills at the seventh seed. So it's deep if it's not guys just tripping over each other or teams tripping over each other one by one. We could spend days and days talking about a victory over the Raiders. Let's get on to our awards, mate, and then we'll spend maybe a little bit more time this week talking about the Philly matchup. So you have the snake. Down the snake. What do you got?
Yeah, tough this week in such a resounding victory, but a couple of snakes. I'll quickly say on Harbaugh's game management on the fourth down that the question I ask myself is this one of the knockbacks or detriments of having a CEO-type head coach who's not also the play caller? Because I'd love to know if Roman or had communicated to him what the play call would be before he decided to go for it on fourth down. Because then they said themselves, in hindsight, they're not happy with that decision to run Vidal out of the shotgun on fourth and one. They could have gone up 10-0 in that game. And that, I think, really increases your win probability against a team who can't move the ball on offense, going from a 7-point lead to a 10-point lead. Instead, we followed up a turnover drive with a turnover on downs drive, which left the score 7-0, which really hurt. But I like, if I'm the head coach and the play caller like McVay, I see that. I've got 40 seconds on the clock. I can quickly say in my head, what do we have in the game plan today? It's fourth and three. We haven't used this play call. I like this one against what they've been showing. Let's go for it. Yep. Instead, does Harbaugh say, hey, Greg, I'm thinking of going for it. What's the play call going to be? I don't think he's got time to do that with 40 seconds on the clock. I think he just has to trust Roman and say, okay, we're going to go for it here. And then, unfortunately, I don't know if Roman's gut tells him the right things all the time in those moments. So that's just a minor snake for Jim Harbaugh. I thought that was actually a rare opportunity to take the points when you've got Herbert with the sore finger. And
you're never happy. You're never happy with it.
Well, I want something where the rationale is really easy to see. And it's rarely, it's always opaque for me, the mysterious Harbaugh rationale. The second snake, you know, it's a weird one. I've gone with the Rondé Gadsden. So from week 6 to 9, in those four games against the Dolphins, Colts, Vikings, and Titans, the guy has caught 24 of 27 targets for 377 yards and 2 touchdowns with 1 drop only. He's played out of his skin in that stretch. The 3 games since against the Steelers, Jags, and Raiders, 6 catches from 13 targets, 81 yards, 4 drops. Now, on the season, he still is having, like, you know, 534 yards and 2 touchdowns as a rookie. But he's that guy I think we need to get back to that form if we're going to scare some of the best teams down the stretch. And I will say his run blocking was really bad in this game. Like Ryan and I watched his Syracuse tape and we saw a guy with good effort and technique. He just doesn't always have the size to get it done. I thought in this game, his angles were poor. His attitude was poor. So he's down the stake. Let's hope he gets right back up the ladder and joins your collection of boys in the next few week, next few games. Andy, who you got?
Yeah, that's it. Up the ladder now, usually after a loss and then a win, this spot is reserved for Jesse Minter, as is my wont. But it's fair to say, folks, that, and look, with the defensive effort, it's really hard to not, you know, get around any one of the defensive coaches, players, whatever. It's fair to say that the man I'm about to talk about has spent most of this year with 1 foot on the ground and 1 on the bottom rung, eagerly looking up the ladder, wanting to climb it. If it's a sign of post-buy or a late season form push, I'm all about it. Hats off to Bradley Bozeman for a really great effort. Best game of the year. His intensity, his physical presence in the middle of the offensive line. He surrendered 0 pressures on Herbert's dropbacks. Seeked contact. Looked to reach the second level regularly in the run game. And while the rushing plan wasn't necessarily up the middle, he was instrumental in helping move the chains on the penultimate 68-yard, 13-play touchdown drive that sealed the game. Awesome work on a couple of Jarrett Patterson's runs. So, really impressive to see Bozeman actually playing some form. And look, I don't know, maybe perhaps being some kind of gel for the the offensive line unit, but best performance for him for the year. So very happy to see that. Well done, Bradley. Okay, it's Monday Night Football this week at SoFi against the Philadelphia Eagles. You've got to go back to 2023 where the Eagles nearly fell off a cliff to see three straight losses. They've had two instances of back-to-back losses this year. The last one's coming against the Cowboys and last week the Bears. So Philly will be looking to come out over to the West Coast and make a statement against a would-be playoff team. The start of a steep climb to postseason football for the Chargers. As we've mentioned, it's prime time this week against the likes of Saquon Barkley, AJ Brown, Devonta Smith. Jesse Minter's got his hands full. Chargers, hopefully, to complement a successful stint of backup running backs with, as I said earlier, the much-anticipated return of Amari and Hampton. Crucial, as we've said, to see what happens with Herbert's hand injury. It'll limit the playbook if he plays. All the eggs are in the air if he can't get up and play. And I think that's a real sway in how you'd sort of predict the outcome of the game. But yeah, Greg Roman, a lot is resting on your big shoulders. So I'm picking a bruising close game. I haven't felt like Philly have been playing good football, but they still have the cattle to do so. Al, how are you feeling about this one? What are your big points, takeaways for the outcome of primetime football Monday night so far?
God, it's so good. And soon we're very excited, listeners. Jack's coming to Melbourne for Christmas. We'll be watching the Chiefs game together. This game, you and I will watch this one. It's just really exciting. Great games of football, and we've positioned ourselves well to give it a real crack down the stretch. I went on to Bleeding Green Nation, the Eagles Super SB Nation page, and good point. Fans think that the consecutive losses this year from the Eagles have always come in short rest games where the previous loss was deflating. So they had a bad loss to the Broncos and then lost to the Giants off a short break. Same again, they had a bad loss to the Cowboys and then lost to the Bears off a short break. So I think we should expect their very best in this game because they know there's a lot of pressure on them. They've had a bit longer to rest heading into this one. But, oh, man, they've got some real issues, I think, on mainly offense, but both sides of the ball. I mean, on offense, they are definitely a team with Hurts who don't utilize very much pre-snap motion. And this Kevin Petullo guy is doing a lot of hitches, curls, go routes on the outside of the field. Hurts is not a guy who's comfortable attacking the middle of the field. So schematically, I wouldn't be surprised if they do put a roof over the coverage a bit more, because I think where this game gets won or lost is on that outside track, particularly like they don't have Lane Johnson, one of the best pass protecting tackles of our generation. I think they're going to struggle to run the ball like they have most of the year behind this offensive line, who is not what it used to be in Philadelphia. It's just not the same group. They've really struggled to keep Hurts protected. He's been pressured the fifth most in the NFL this year. So I think we've got a fighting puncher's chance on defense to really keep this game in check. The absolute recipe for disaster in this game is if the Eagles front seven somehow gets after us. And on their day, they can still be really tough. We know that their front line is still dangerous, and their linebackers might be the best unit in the league with Zach Bourne and N'Kobe Dean coming back and Jihad Campbell. Fangio doesn't blitz a lot, but they don't need to blitz. They can find ways to get pressure using fire zones, doing whatever they want. They like to keep that deep coverage. And we know that their current group of DBs, if you can avoid Quinion and avoid Cooper DeJean, you have a Dory Jackson and Sydney Brown because they've got injuries at safety where maybe you can hit one or two bombs yourself on offense. So, yeah, I think this is a line ball game. I think my brain tells me it's going to be too hard to beat the Super Bowl champs from last year at the moment, given we're still working back Hampton and Herbert's got his finger injury and all of the rest of it.
And you're also hoping that the offensive line plays to the level that they did this week just gone, right? Because if Herbert needs to throw, if we get behind and Herbert needs to throw, as you said, we're throwing to Quinion Mitchell, Cooper DeJean, it's trouble. And if we can't run the ball, then that really makes it hard for the Chargers to put up points. And if things do click for that offense, you know, a couple of little bits and pieces with Smith and Brown, and Barkley's still Saquon Barkley, yeah? Like,
yeah,
they can still move the ball, maintain possession. Sirianni's a good coach situationally as well. If Herbert does play and he's at, let's say, 80%, 70%, it's still a bit of a question mark for me. Very close. As I said, bruising encounter. I'm going to take the Eagles 23-20 in this one.
I'm going to go all heart in this one. And I'm going to say Chargers 21, Eagles 17. It's a happy time of the year, man. Full of love. December, we got Christmas on the way. Give us an early Christmas present, Chargers. Get us this dub. Get us to 9-4.
Yeah, it really will change. It will set the mentality for the rest of the year. You knock off the Super Bowl champions in December, competitive season. It really sets the tone. It sets the tone and lets the players know that that is what they're capable of. And a push into the second week of playoffs is far from out of the question. Anything further to add, sir, for this week? Hopefully we'll get Jackie Boy back next week.
Yeah, and we will work out the best way to do a show, the three of us all in the same place. We might get creative. We might play around with YouTube live again. We'll see how we go. And thanks, everyone, for joining. We were really surprised that show did good numbers for something we put up the day before. So thanks so much, guys, for all the support. And gals, we saw from some of the commentary, which was fantastic and highly surprising. But we appreciate you, TDU crew. Enjoy another fantastic primetime game.
And just a quick one for Eric V, one of our favorite listeners. Becton's back, baby. Thanks, guys. Take it easy. Enjoy your week. We will see you next time on the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. Hooray.
Firing, he's got Floyd turning, got it, 6 and 10, 5, high step, touchdown, 10!